If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Now playing Open Floor.
This is Open Floor.
Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix back at it.
An NBA podcast with Sports Illustrated senior writer.
I think it's time that the world get to know
my guy Chris Mannix.
I think your opinion is shared by everyone.
And now it begins.
Bang!
Welcome back, Open Floor NBA podcast. We have taken a couple of weeks off for the summer, but we are back. And the more things change here on the podcast, the more they stay the same. I am joined by a familiar voice on the SI podcast circuit. He is the one, the only, Rohan Nadkarni, now plying his trade with NBC News. Rohan, welcome back, my friend.
Wow, great to be here. Love what you guys have done with the place. See, we're back on the Open Floor feed now. We got the fancy YouTube channel. The budget for the show I see has really increased since I left, and I'm really
skyrocketed
happy for you guys.
Skyrocketed. Yeah. Let me tell you, it has skyrocketed. NBC News now, though. Congratulations. How's that going?
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate that, man. Truly, it's been fun. It's been cool. You know, everyone, please go check out Despicable Me 4 in theaters. I hope you guys all enjoyed the Olympics on NBC. You know, make sure your DVR is set to all your favorite Bravo shows. I'm thoroughly enjoying it, man. It's been really cool.
No need for a peacock shout out there as well. Just add that one in. If you want to watch Yellowstone, check out Yellowstone on
there
Peacock.
There we go. Now.
Well, good to have you back, Rohan. And I want to get into a couple of topics here. Before we start, though, on the main topics, I was scrolling through Twitter on Monday morning, and I came across the clips from the Bill Simmons podcast. And Bill was talking about the Celtics sale, which is still in the early stages of developing bidders and figuring out what this team is going to be worth and who his team is going to be sold to. But Bill put into the universe something that's been talked about a little bit over the last couple of months, and that's this idea that Jeff Bezos could jump into the mix and purchase the Celtics. Now, you know, Bill said that the Celtics are going to be asking for about $6 billion. I agree with that. That's a number I've heard as well. I think the low watermark for the Celtics was probably going to be about $5 billion. Like, that's probably the low mark for the Celtics. And given the state of the team, the fact that they are a glamour franchise, $6 billion I don't think is out of the question. And when you put that kind of price tag on it, there really are only, you know, a relatively small number of individuals that could make an offer that would satisfy that price tag. And Jeff Bezos, of course, is one of them. Centi billionaire, whatever you call it. I mean, the guy's worth well over $100 billion, whatever the number ultimately is. And I was intrigued by this idea because, look, Jeff Bezos, I think, would be an ideal owner for the Celtics. He's someone with, you know, the kind of deep pockets that would, you know, be able to pay these big luxury tax payments that are coming over the next few years. I think as an owner of a corporation, he has done a pretty good job with the Washington Post. I mean, they've had their ups and downs like most in the media industry have, but overall his stewardship, I think, has been a success of the Post. And I think Jeff Bezos would do something that I think is a long time coming with the Celtics, and that is build their own arena. Like, for people that don't know, the Celtics do not own the TD Garden. That is owned by the ownership group of the Boston Bruins. It is a Bruins building, and the Celtics effectively pay rent. Because of that, they can't, you know, do a lot of things that a lot of NBA teams with buildings can do. Can't hold a lot of outside events, can't do whatever they want when it comes to their own franchise. I would imagine Jeff Bezos, if he buys that team, is going to be looking to build a new arena sooner rather than later. So I'm all in with this idea of Jeff Bezos as the owner of the Celtics. How do you feel about it?
It's definitely interesting. I mean, with that luxury tax bill that's coming, you're going to want someone with deep pockets. I think that's interesting. And that's kind of a real, to me, the most important part of these sales talks is, are you going to get an owner who's willing to spend to keep this team together? Because it was, you know, we weren't talking about it then, but it was kind of very funny when this news came out that the current ownership group was looking to sell, just the timing of it after giving out contracts to basically this entire roster, which, by the way, I think is the right move. That's what we want all these ownership groups to do, right? Keep these championship teams together. I like that they're kind of spitting in the face of the CBA designed to break up a team like the Celtics. But you're going to want an owner who can come in there and frankly, have the cash to shell out to keep this team together for as long as possible. So I think that, to me, if you're a Celtics fan or just a fan of the idea the team stay together, you want a Bezos type coming in that's going to be able to afford how expensive it's going to be. It's going to be the most expensive team in NBA history. I think maybe if not this season, next season for sure. So that to me is the most important part of the sale. Can you get someone in who can right away off the jump, off the rip, pay what it takes to keep the roster together? The building thing is interesting because I saw your tweet and then like that, I was like doing some research about it because it never occurred to me that the Celtics didn't own that arena.
Yeah,
I will say what would be interesting about them going that route. I mean, we don't have to get into city planning here, but that's a very easy arena to get to. I know we like to dump on Miami fans. That's like one of the worst arenas to get to. Like whenever I'm in Boston, I'm amazed by like how many different ways I can get to that arena really easily. I don't think it's ever going to be an issue in Boston to fill up that arena on time or wherever they put it, but it is nice how convenient it is. I'll say that.
Well, look, Boston is a city built on public transportation. It's a lot like New York in that sense. Mm-hmm. So if you did build it in another area, there either would be already public transportation built in or they would find a way to build out to it, right? Like you would quickly have avenues to get there via the red line, the green line, the orange line, all the lines that are around Boston. So I'm less concerned about that. They do have a lease with TD Garden, which takes them into the 2030s, I believe. So that's inherently problematic. But look, I think the idea of Bezos coming in, buying the team, building an arena. Hey, how about bringing a WNBA team into Boston? Like, why is there not a WNBA team in Boston? Like the Connecticut Sun are going to have a game against the LA Sparks on Tuesday at TD Garden, and it's already sold more than 19,000 tickets. Like, as someone that grew up in Boston, the summertime is Red Sox time, right? But when the Red Sox suck, which they often do, there are a lot of fans looking for a place to go and a lot of fans looking for a team to support. And if you put a good WNBA team there, I think there would be pretty strong support for it. We've seen the way the WNBA has grown over the last 5 or 6 years, especially this year. It's taken off, thanks in large part to Caitlin Clark. So I think, you know, Bezos could bring a WNBA franchise in with the team as well. I just think it makes a lot of sense. Now, there is still, and I've reported on this before, there still is support internally for Steve Pagliuca, who is the minority owner of the team right now, who wants to be the majority owner, who wants to buy the Grousbeck family's share of the team. But can he put together the money – that satisfies the financial demands of the Grauspecs. Make no mistake here, they're not giving anybody a hometown discount. That $6 billion number is real. Like, they are going to go for the best possible offer, regardless of who is writing that check. So if Pagliuca can do it, they'll certainly be willing to deal with him. But I think Jeff Bezos is a really interesting name to watch for the Celtics moving forward.
For sure. And we know that he's been interested. I mean, there's a lot of talk about him trying to buy the Commanders and maybe Daniel Snyder just turning down a better offer just because he didn't want to sell to Bezos. That's interesting. The one thing I'm curious about, I don't know if, like, how much you know about it, like the idea that it's going to be like a multi-year process. It sounds like no one's going to be able to buy this team.
It's not
in one fell swoop.
You know, the NBA is not going to go for that. Like,
got
that,
it. Got it.
That to me was Wick Grauspeck, who I think is the least motivated member of the Grauspeck family when it comes to selling this team. I think that was his way of trying to stay in the mix while this team is really good, right? Like, they've got a window now of 2 or 3 years, and this idea that you're going to sell, like, what was it, like 50%, 49% of the team by the end of this year, the rest of the team in the next couple of years, Grauspeck would stay on as team governor. Like, that to me is pie in the sky.
Yeah,
like, that is, you know, if Jeff Bezos is not doing a multi-tiered buying process.
Right.
Because Jeff
Bezos,
he's got $6 billion in, like, his E-Trade account. Like, it's this guy's got the cash. He can write a big check right now. He's not doing it over a multi-tiered process, not involving banks and all this. Like, he's just writing a check, and that's going to be the end of it. Of course, there's more to it than that, but it's pretty fundamental when it comes to Jeff Bezos. So, no, I think when the dust settles, you're probably going to see this team bought in one fell swoop. And that's the way the NBA wants it, too. I mean, they still feel burned over the Timberwolves process. Like, there's no doubt the way that thing has become a mess, and it's still a mess, lingers with the NBA. So I'm expecting this to once they agree on a buyer, especially if it's Bezos, I don't expect this to be a multi-tiered process. I think it happens relatively quickly. All right, let's talk about some of the things that are going on in the NBA right now. And this is another thing that came across my news feed over the weekend. We all remember the reports last year about LeBron James potentially being traded to the Golden State Warriors. This was something that was discussed, it was reported, at pretty high levels between the Lakers and the Golden State Warriors. It's hard to say how close they came on players and assets, but this was something that was discussed at high levels. Mark Stein writes a terrific Substack. He reported over the weekend that it was Rich Paul, the agent of LeBron James, that effectively scuttled the deal, in part because, you know, I think Rich had some concerns, or he thinks Rich had some concerns about LeBron playing for his, what would be, fourth NBA team, kind of fifth, even include two go-rounds with Cleveland. And that was the end of that when it came to LeBron moving on. As we sit here right now, Rohan, where, you know, the Lakers are in very much a state of mediocrity. The Warriors, for now, are kind of in a state of mediocrity. Both these teams have high-end stars / superstars, but neither team appears to be going anywhere. Was this the right move, I guess, by Rich Paul? If it's true that he went out there and, you know, we're not doing this, it's not happening. Was that the right move for LeBron's career? Because, yes, it would have been another stop on the LeBron James journey, but it's hard to argue that, you know, LeBron, Steph, Draymond, and whatever they could put around him, that wouldn't be more of a contender than the team they're on right now.
If we're looking at it in purely basketball terms, I don't think it was the right move. Now, I think you could make the argument, look, LeBron's never been traded. I think that's important to him. He's never asked for a trade. And I think that is important. And I respect that being important to him. He's always only ever moved in free agency, et cetera. I don't think he wants to do kind of like the Kevin Durant situation, getting traded at the trade deadline. That doesn't seem appealing to him. To me, the bigger issue, Chris, is him re-signing with the Lakers this summer. And, you know, based on what? They brought in Bronny. That was their big offseason move, was drafting Bronny, who, even if I'm intrigued by him as a prospect, look, we don't have to relitigate Bronny right now. Like, I'm not here to get my Bronny takes off my chest, but that they did not do enough this summer, okay? to catch the Nuggets, let alone the rest of the Western Conference, being the Mavericks, the Wolves, the Grizzlies, I think are going to be really good next year.
Thunder are the class of the conference right now. Yeah.
The Thunder, like, I mean, that is a massive uphill climb for them. I don't understand why he re-signed in Los Angeles, unless you're looking at it for non-basketball reasons. And that's really what I just feel has been like the push and pull of LeBron's entire LA tenure, is this guy, frankly, I think, Chris, was pretty ruthless starting in 2010 in terms of making decisions that were best for his basketball career. I mean, he left the Miami Heat after four straight finals runs because I think he probably saw Dwayne Wade's knees and said, I have a better basketball opportunity here in Cleveland. I mean, we can talk about coming home and all that. I'm sure that played a role, but I'm sure deep down he said, I can get with Kyrie and Kevin Love. I'm going to have a better chance to where I left. And then Cleveland, once Kyrie left, Kevin Love, not quite the same player, had some struggles in the playoffs here and there. I think he said, I can go to LA. It'll be easier to recruit another star. I think he assumed Anthony Davis would come pretty soon. He did. But I just don't know what percent of the pie chart for LeBron winning a title is right now. I'm not saying it's not a priority, that it's not important to him, but I don't know that it's the same fervor and determination that he had 15 years ago, which is normal. I mean, the guy's obviously won a ton. He's accomplished everything you can accomplish in the game. The irony, Chris, to me is, I understand why, you know, LeBron's team, for example, would be sensitive to the idea of him playing for another franchise, the optics of him moving to another team. There's like no point in LeBron's career where people would be more excited to see him play with Steph Curry than right now. Like, the public support that there would be if LeBron and Steph teamed up at this stage in their careers to try to take down some of these other teams, like, from a narrative standpoint, from, you know, a public goodwill standpoint, now is the time to do it. Like, now is absolutely the time to do it. It would be incredible if somehow the sides could still work out a trade. It bothers me for both of these guys to see them at this stage in their careers, who they might not be the very best, but if you put the right team around either Steph or LeBron, they'd have a chance to win the title. Both franchises have failed to do that.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the Warriors in a couple of minutes, but there's no doubt that right now, with the roster they have, they're probably in the play-in mix. Same thing with the Lakers, with the caliber of the teams that are in front of them and the rise of the teams that were behind them last year. It's going to be very difficult for them to get out of those particular spots. Look, one thing I take away from all this, it takes me back to 2018 when LeBron first signed with the Lakers. He didn't just sign with the Lakers for basketball reasons. Like, one of the reasons he signed with the Lakers was because of the opportunity to bring his family to the Los Angeles area, the California lifestyle, the opportunities it would present for his production company and all the things he was doing off the floor. Yes, of course, if you're a Laker, you have the ability to recruit, but it's not like he stepped into a ready-made situation. Yes,
for sure.
He could have gotten Anthony Davis, but what would it take, like a year plus to get AD? Like, so he went through a bad first year with the Lakers. We all remember some of those memes that were on social media, all the guys around LeBron that nobody knew who they were. So it wasn't a basketball decision necessarily to go there. And maybe the same thing is applicable here, right? Like, yes, for purely basketball reasons, LeBron to Golden State made more sense, or makes more sense, than LeBron staying with the Lakers and trying to win with this group. But, you know, at the time last year, Bronny was still at USC, and, you know, LeBron was at some of those games. I know he enjoyed watching his son, being able to watch his son play home games up close and personal. You know, the idea of uprooting his family and even just going, you know, a few hours north to go to San Francisco probably wasn't all that appealing to him. So I got to believe that as much as it might have been about, hey, you know, the legacy of playing for a fourth NBA franchise that's maybe not appealing, I think it's just as likely that the family decisions that were at the root of why he went to the Lakers in the first place were still in play 6 years later.
That absolutely makes sense. And yeah, you know, I'm sure we know how much his family's factored into those decisions before too, maybe even going back to Cleveland that second time. I think that definitely played a role then also. And it's funny because now you can almost argue it both ways. It's like, now that Bronny's actually in the NBA and has a guaranteed contract, like, does he need to be kind of I mean, concern's not the right word, but does he feel a sense of security knowing that Bronny's place in the NBA is a little secure? And now maybe he feels more ready to move around? Or is it the opposite? Is it like, my son is on my team, like I can't leave the situation now? I'm interested to see how that plays out. And look, it's easy for me to sit here and say, LeBron, demand a trade. What are you doing? Like, we want to see you play for a championship contender while you still can do it. I think the flip side of that is, you know, what are the Lakers doing here? What's the plan? I mean, we're looking at, as much as I respect J.J. Redick as a basketball mind, we're looking at like rookie head coach, no substantial roster upgrades. There has to be a better plan from Rob Pelinka. And maybe LeBron believes, if he got any kind of assurance when he re-signed, like maybe he believes there's a pathway for this team to get the right supporting cast around him. And that's why he's kind of holding out hope for the Lakers here. But it's tough, man. It's tough to think that this guy who made 8 straight finals, and that was the goal, win as many as possible, has even taken his foot off the gas a tiny bit, because we can see how good he still is. I thought he was the best player on that team. He's the best player on, you got the 12 best players, you know, in America on that team, and I thought he was the best player on it. Like, it's frustrating to think that this is really it. This is the plan.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't see how they can make the kind of deal that puts them on the same level as some of the teams you just mentioned there. And look, once again, outside of your thrice yearly trip to, or games against Portland, you're not going to face any pushovers in the Western Conference. They just don't exist right now. So I think it's going to be really tough. And look, Jared Vanderbilt coming back is going to help. Gabe Vincent coming back healthy is going to help. But substantially, I don't know.
Well, D'Angelo Russell can get as hot as Steph Curry, according to D'Angelo Russell. So.
That tweet was quickly up and then quickly down from D'Angelo Russell.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance, like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Let's talk a little bit about the New York Knicks, because I saw recently the sports books released their over-under win totals, and DraftKings has the Knicks penciled in at 52.5 wins. That's the highest projection for the Knicks in 25 years. Obviously, the Knicks, Rohan, got better this summer. They added Mikal Bridges. They'll get Julius Randle back. They surged into that number two spot in the Eastern Conference before those injuries caught up with them against Indiana. So Vegas right now thinks that the Knicks are a legit threat to the Boston Celtics. What say you, Rohan?
Legit threat to the Celtics? I don't know that I'm willing to go that far. I really like what the Knicks have done the last couple of years. I mean, first and foremost, it starts with, frankly, now multiple times, they are doing like a small scale version of what the Warriors had with Steph Curry, which is, if your best player is on an under market contract, all of a sudden building a team becomes way different. You know, they're paying Jalen Brunson way less than what you pay a player of his caliber. And that's unlocked this whole new route of team building for them. Now he's willing to continue to take a discount. They get a guy like Mikal Bridges, who is already on one of the best contracts in the NBA. It sounds like he might be willing to take a discount moving forward as well. That's helping them a lot. I still don't know how this team is going to come together. Who are their five players playing at in the last 5 minutes of a fourth quarter? Because Randall's going to want to play. Bridges, Anunoby, Hart, DiVincenzo, Brunson, that's six guys right there, and none of them are a center. So I don't understand how Tibbs is going to put the pieces together. Do I think they could be a great regular season team? Yes, because Tom Thibodeau always pushes his guys in the regular season. His Bulls teams always kind of overachieved because of how hard he pushed them. And I think he could get this Knicks team up to 56, 57 wins because of how hard he pushes his guys. And because I think the Eastern Conference, you never know what you're going to get any year. In terms of a legit threat to the Celtics, I still see the Sixers as that team. I still see the Bucks as that team because of the multiple stars that they have. The Knicks, it's funny. I was one of those people that's like, they got to trade Randall, right? Then you look around the league and you're like, to who? For who? I'm curious what you think. I have no idea how they put it all together. I have no idea how they put it all together.
Let me say this. I am a Knicks believer. Mm-hmm. I am. I am a Knicks truther right now. I love the Bridges addition. I think beyond the obvious chemistry fit with, you know, his former, you know, econ class guys from Nova, I think it works on the court. You add Bridges to OG Anunoby, Josh Hart. These are big time wing defenders, and to beat the Celtics,
it's the best possible route to beating the Celtics. As many switchable wings as possible.
1,000%. I also think with Boston, you're going to have a sluggish start. Like, no Porzingis till at least Christmas. Jason Tatum coming off the Olympics. Like, the obvious hangover that happens to championship-level teams. I can see the Celtics being a middle-of-the-pack conference team into January, right? Mm-hmm. Like, doesn't mean they'll be that way in April or May, but I can see them being a very average team into January. The Randall stuff, like, I get it. Like, there is a Randall dilemma, and I'll get to that in a minute. But the numbers don't really back up this assertion that the Knicks are somehow better without Julius Randle. Like, before Randle got hurt back in, what was it, January, February, they went 29-17. They were the eighth best record in the league, league-wide. Since that point, after that point, they went 21-15. That was 12th in the NBA. They had a plus 5.6 point differential before Randle went out on January 27th. That was fifth. They allowed about 110 points per game. They averaged 115 points per game. After that, they had a lower point differential. It was plus 3.3. They gave up 106.2 points per game, so their defense was a little bit better. And they averaged 109.5 points per game, so their offense was measurably worse. More importantly, an easier stat to figure out, is that they went 12-2 with Randle and OG Anunoby in the lineup. That's not the biggest of sample sizes, but that's a pretty reasonable sample size to look at.
You know, that was when they were really taking off, was when as soon as they got Anunoby. Yeah.
Yes. Anunoby gets plugged in. Randall's still there. They've got their largely complete team. I think that's reason to be optimistic that this Randall group can work. I think the Knicks finished with the number one record in the Eastern Conference.
Wow.
I think they're going to take off. They're going to take off during the regular season, Rohan. Boston's going to stumble. Philadelphia's going to have a learning curve. I'm not yet ready to believe in Cleveland and Orlando and some of those other teams around them. I think the Knicks have the best record in the East at the end of the season. Now, the Randall stuff, where you have questions is, like, where do you put him positionally? Mm-hmm. Because I do think that your best lineup is going to be Brunson and then the three guys I mentioned, Josh Hart, OG, Mikal Bridges. So whether it's Josh Hart or Bridges, one of those guys is going to play power forward. That means Randall's going to have to be a center. Like, I think Randall has to be maybe not the starting five of this team, but the closing five of this team. I think the loss of Hartenstein is going to hurt. He was a great rebounder, offensive rebounder, really good passer. I think they're going to have to overcome that. They could probably do some of that by plugging Randall into that five spot, using Mitchell Robinson and Randall kind of interchangeable at that position. If Randall accepts and thrives in that five role, this team has a chance. They've got a chance. I still think Boston at full strength is better, but I think chemistry-wise, the whole thing can work because I think Randall as a five, if he comes back as the player we saw last year, 24 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists per game, I think they've got a chance. I think they're the best team in the Eastern Conference during the regular season. And then we'll see what happens in the playoffs.
I do think it would be kind of a Tibbs special to have them number one in the East. As much as I want to make fun of that take, I could see it happening. He just pushes guys. He gets the most out of these teams. He's going to play Brunson big minutes. He's going to play his best players big minutes. I think there's a very solid chance of that happening. The Randall at the five thing is interesting because there was a time in his career where it looked like that was maybe going to be his future. Like when he was in New Orleans and he was kind of like an energy big, you know, run the floor, fast break five. It was a ton of fun to watch. And I loved watching that version of him. Whereas now, you know, he likes to pound the ball, ISO. And look, it's led to a lot of success on NBA selections. Good for Julius Randle, a lot of money. It's just the
but Ron,
irony.
They can't win. They cannot win in the playoffs if it is the Jalen Brunson show. Teams are too good defensively.
Yes.
Like you've got to have diversity of offense, yes. And he offers that.
It can work for a round or two, but you're correct. And what the thing is, they need the issue they've had is he hasn't been an efficient version of Julius Randle in the playoffs. Is we haven't seen that yet. He struggled in that Atlanta series. That next year,
that's putting it kindly. Okay,
yes,
like he has been really bad in the playoffs. Like
that's
a fact.
Yes, and so they need a better version of him. It's just funny as you were talking about like matching up the Celtics. Like the real irony is, it's like there's no better five. I mean, there's no better five for a lot of teams, but like if this Knicks team had Porzingis at the five, I think we'd be talking about them like we do Boston. But I just worry that what will it look like with Randall at the five defensively against a team like Boston? Can he hold up? Can he be efficient enough offensively on the other end to make it work? Because I agree, like positionally, it's going to be interesting what they decide between Randall, or do you go super small? Do you go super small against a team like Boston, bring in a DiVincenzo or, you know, someone like that off the bench? Like,
do you even have to go super small against Boston? Like Boston goes, besides Porzingis, like they're playing small anyway.
I agree. So it's like,
Tatum is the five, or Brown is the five in these situations.
Could you get away with OG at the five or Mikhail at the five and size down?
1,000%.
Yeah. It'll be very interesting. I agree.
Josh Hart played five. Some five there. Yeah. Certainly was playing power forward for most of those minutes.
Yeah. They will definitely have to get creative. And I do think Randall at the five is going to be something that deserves a very long look. And the other irony of all this is to me, not irony, but factor, I guess, is they have the one coach who I wonder how much leash he's going to be willing to give those lineups. Because I think Tibbs, for better or worse, is like, you know, stuck in his ways. And they've been very successful. I think he's a great coach. I want to point that out. But he is someone who does like to play big, who does like to have size on the floor. How much, you know, kind of leeway is he going to be willing to give those lineups? It's very interesting. I'm fascinated to see how it all works out, but they're a very interesting threat. When you could throw Hart, they have an opportunity to throw Hart, DiVincenzo, Anunoby, and Bridges at the Celtics at the same time. I think that is the best possible four perimeter defenders you could have against Boston, really among any team. And that alone makes them very interesting.
The other aspect with Randall is the fact that he's extension eligible now. He is extension eligible for a contract that can be worth 4 years, around $180 million. Now, I've seen some people out there suggest that, look, he took less money the last time around. He's been a good soldier for this team. He's been a productive member of this team. He's 29 years old. You know, if you got to max him out to keep him, you max him out to keep him. I am completely on the other side of that fence, because I think you got to see what he looks like with this new group. And just because you got a little flexibility because Jalen Brunson took a below market offer doesn't mean you go out there and splurge on 4 years, $180 million of Julius Randle. He's got a contract that runs through next season. He's got a player option for the year after that. And if you look at the landscape next summer, there are teams out there with some cap space, but who is spending it on a 30-year-old Julius Randle? Like, is Houston going to use its cap flexibility to go put Randle next to Alperen Sengun? I don't think so. Like, is Detroit going to go out there and sign Julius Randle? Doesn't really fit with what they're trying to do in Detroit. I think his options are going to be limited. So if I'm the Knicks, if I'm Leon Rose, I'm looking at Julius Randle. I'm talking to his agents, and I'm saying, look, you know, we want you, but it's got to be for like a Draymond Green type of deal. It's got to be 4 years, $100 million, the kind of deal that you can take And, you know, even if it's not looking great on the back end, you can trade it. It's not gobbling up a huge amount of space on your books. I think the biggest mistake the Knicks could make right now is giving Julius a contract that pushes him into that $35, $40 million per year range. I know that $35, $40 million isn't what it used to be, and the cap right. is going to continue to go up, but that's still a big chunk of change for a guy that has, A, yet to prove he can play at a high level in the playoffs, and B, yet to prove that he can play with this new group of long, defensive-minded wing players that are led officially by Jalen Brunson as the hub of your offense. So I would wait until next summer to do a deal with Julius Randle.
I could not agree with that more. 100% on the money there. They got to wait on Randle. They got to see what happens. You know, DiVincenzo came in on a below market deal. If you want to keep a guy like him, he's going to need more money eventually. Bridges' next deal is going to go up soon.
Yep.
Even if he does take a discount, but they can't afford to, I think, overpay for Randle, even though they, like you mentioned, they have this brief window. They got to see how he looks next to everybody first.
I agree. So let's talk about the Warriors. The NBA schedule was released last week, and the takeaway that I got from the schedule makers anyway is that Golden State is going to be really good. That's what the schedule makers think. The league has scheduled the Warriors for 36 national TV games. That's more than any team except the Lakers. That's two more than the defending champion Celtics. Rohan, the Warriors won 46 games last year. They did not make the playoffs. They lost Klay Thompson in the offseason. Steph Curry and Draymond Green are a year older. Andrew Wiggins looked like the Minnesota version of himself last season. So what do you think, Rohan? Are the Warriors going to be worth all these national TV games, or is the league going to start flexing them out of these come January?
This is like how the Knicks just got a Christmas Day game for 20 years, no matter what. People would see New York on the screen and watch. This is not quite as bad because at least they still have Steph Curry. I think this to me is this is entirely about Steph. He's one of the biggest draws, not only in America, but internationally. He is a huge star, and they want to get him on TV as much as possible. Do I think the league is going to have to flex some of these out? Yes, I do. I think some of these matchups are going to end up being incredibly underwhelming, but I'm trying to talk myself into the Warriors a little bit. I mean, I thought given that their limitations this offseason and what I thought was clearly trying to shed payroll, they did an interesting job. I do think that, you know, some of their role players, whether it's Buddy Hield, Kyle Anderson, could be good fits around Steph Curry. Could they get back up to 45 wins? I wouldn't be shocked if Steph has another great year. So, yeah, that 36 number is pretty wild. This to me is entirely about, I'm trying to think of the ways that I can like talk myself into the Warriors. To me, this is entirely about Steph being one of the biggest stars in the world and them coasting off that and coasting off reputation that they've had the last, you know, 10 years, more so than what they can do this upcoming season.
So let me try to help you with the talking into the Warriors. the potential upsides with their young players. Trayce Jackson-Davis was a revelation last season. 16 games, a starter, averaged 11 points, 8 rebounds, shot nearly 70% from the floor. He's undersized for the center position, but so wasn't Kevon Looney. And Trayce Jackson-Davis proved to be a better option than Looney later on in the season. Brandon Podziemski, solid in his first season,
they love
74
pods.
Games.
They love pods.
Love him. We're gonna get to that in a moment. Yeah. Shot the three ball well. One of the best rebounding guards in the NBA. Still has to improve that overall shooting percentage, but as a rookie, you know, especially going through what he had to go through, is like, hey, you're taking Klay Thompson's spot. Like, that's got to be overwhelming for a young kid. I thought he played really well. Jonathan Kuminga nearly doubled his scoring average. If he has a better three-point shot this season, I think he's got all-star potential. Like, he's got the complete game beyond that three-point shot. Moses Moody, he was much better in his third season. The guys they replaced Klay Thompson with are not Klay Thompson-esque, but Buddy Hield can shoot it. De'Anthony Melton, when he's healthy, he can defend. Kyle Anderson does a little bit of everything and has proven to be reliable. I think Minnesota is really going to miss him. But Steph is still 36 years old. Yeah. Draymond Green is still 34 years old. Age catches up to everyone. And the expectation that Steph is going to have the same kind of season he did last year, I don't think you can count on that. I think you can count him having an all-star level year, but yeah. like an MVP level year at 36, especially coming off an Olympic run, that to me is a lot to ask. I know some people have said, look, Draymond, he sabotaged the team last year with his behavior. If he doesn't do that this year, doesn't miss all those games, they're going to be in a better place. Well, all right, well, we're counting on Draymond
to change. Another wild card here. It's
like I don't disagree with the assertion. Yeah. Like, if he is a more controlled player on the court, it definitely makes them better. Not missing all those games definitely makes them better, but what have we seen to suggest that that's going to happen? Like, the guy after the season still throwing grenades at Rudy Gobert on TV.
God. That was
like,
crazy,
wasn't he?
Man.
He
that
was in
crazy.
Paris. He was in Paris, yeah. right? Like, you know, like, effectively to like stare at Rudy. Like,
yeah, right.
I mean, it, like, I don't like. I'll be looking forward to those matchups early in the season. Like, I don't know if you can count on that either. And you know, he's going to be, I think, a step slower than he was last year. At 34, there's just a lot of question marks with this team. And I do think they're going to be good enough if they're healthy to be in at least the play-in mix. They might even squeeze the number six seed out of it. But beyond that, like without a major upgrade, I don't think they're going to be very good. So let me talk for a second about that major upgrade. Because for weeks, the Warriors were having conversations with the Utah Jazz about Lauri Markkanen. Now, not surprisingly, Danny Ainge probably wanted Joe Lacob's like... kids, he wanted like a key to his beach house along right, with 77 draft picks. Like doing a deal with Danny Ainge when Danny feels like he has leverage is incredibly difficult. Ask some of the myriad GMs that have done those deals over the years. The Warriors ultimately did not bite on a Lauri Markkanen deal, which reportedly would have included Brandon Podziemski, who we just talked about. They love him in Golden State. Multiple first round picks, obviously some salary filler as well. Markkanen turns around and he signs a max extension with the Jazz, which effectively makes him untradeable next year because of the timing of the extension. The first day he's eligible to be traded is after the trade deadline. So he is a member of the Jazz for the entire season, which could prove problematic for Utah as well as they try to sink in the standings. But the question is, should the Warriors have gone all in? Because I do think you can make the case that Markkanen, you know, opens that championship window a little bit more than, you know, Podziemski and draft capital would. But you would be sacrificing, you know, your future for a short-term fix that may not, you know, may not put you into the upper echelon of Western Conference teams. So should the Warriors have gone all in to get Lauri Markkanen?
Man, it's a tough one. First of all, I have the highest opinion of Lauri Markkanen. I think he's a fantastic player. You know, I got to do a story on him his first year in Utah, and he was fantastic. And everyone in the organization loved this guy. I can't, you know, Will Hardy was such a big fan of Lauri Markkanen. I think not only just as a basketball player, but as a person, I think that it was obvious to me how important it was to him to finally be in a city that seemed to like embrace him, right? You think about his career, Chicago, he is a changing role. He finally has some success in Cleveland and they trade him after a year. I think it's been exciting for him to find success. I just like, he's been this good in Utah on a team that's not good, not going anywhere. Imagine if you put him next to Steph and Draymond. I think he could take off in a way that he's, you know, he's already been fantastic in Utah. Think about how good guys look playing next to Steph Curry. You put a 7-foot movement shooter next to him and Draymond defensively, like I think that would have been incredible. And, you know, so I pulled up their depth chart during our conversation, and look, it's hard to say, like, okay, let's say for the sake of argument, they give up Pods, they give up Kuminga,
Wiggins,
they give up Moses Moody. You still got D'Anthony Melton. You still got.
I don't think they would have given up both their young guys because there would have been draft picks included there, and I don't think the Warriors were going to budge on both. Like, that would have been...
Right.
If they gave up Pods, Moody, Kuminga, and draft picks, like, no. That's a full stop hard no.
But I do wish these teams would have been able to find a deal. And, you know, I respect Danny Ainge. I think Lauri Markkanen, what I'm alluding to, I bet Lauri Markkanen is thrilled to know that he can't be traded this season. I think that's important to him. having said that, I think it would have made so much sense for both these teams to figure out a deal, man. And sometimes it's like, sometimes common sense has to prevail. As good as Lauri Markkanen is, and there's no guarantees in the lottery, Utah's just stuck. They're stuck. They're stuck in a loaded Western Conference. They're going to want to tank. It should have worked out, man. It should have worked out. And I really thought this was going to get done on the last day. Was it the August 6th was kind of the unofficial deadline?
Yeah.
I can't believe this one didn't get worked out, man. And I'd say, I think, and I get it, because I think Brandon Pozinski's really good. He had a great rookie season. But Steph is Steph, man. Like, as good as Brandon Pozinski is, or Kuminga, the Warriors can get versions of those guys 10 years from now when, or 5 years from now when Steph is all said and done. Like, I think they should have gone after Lowry with everything they had. I really do.
Yeah, I lean that way too, because, you know, look, Markkanen is only 27 years old. Like, yeah. It's not like you're getting a guy in his mid-30s that is only going to be good for a couple of years. You could get, you know, five more really good years from Markkanen. And I agree with you. Like, you put a 7-foot shooter on the wing opposite Steph and some of the other guys that they signed. It's a pretty dynamic offensive team. Now, I get it's a tough pill to swallow. I don't know the full details of exactly where they stopped these negotiations. I do know Pods was deemed off limits, at least in the latest incarnation of the deal, last incarnation of the deal. I don't believe that both those young guys in Kuminga and Moody would have been on the table. One of them probably would have been. And then Wiggins is more the salary filler, mm-hmm. and then there's draft capital as well. But it is true that, like, Danny asks for the world.
Right.
And, you know, he knows when he's got a team over the barrel. And when he feels like he has a team over the barrel, he's going to keep holding out for more and more and just try to prey on your desperation. So we do with Brooklyn. Like, Brooklyn really wanted to have, you know, Garnett and Paul Pierce to pair with Darren Williams and Joe Johnson and Brooke Lopez. Mm-hmm. And Danny was able to extract what he did. He got real value from Rajon Rondo as well, you know, all down the line of the deals that he's done. The Warriors ultimately believe the price was too high. That's fair, but I think, you know, you put Markkanen on that team, they're definitely a playoff team. I would say definitely a playoff team out of that play-in mix. And then from there, who knows? So that's going to be one we're going to be talking about, I think, for most of the season next year. If this team gets off to a rough start, if they wind up, you know, in that play-in mix for most of the year. I think the one thing that could bump the Warriors up internally is, you know, some kind of bounce-back year from Andrew Wiggins. Like,
big
when
time.
I say Wiggins, when I say Wiggins was Minnesota Wiggins, I'm not trying to be funny here. Like, his scoring number, lowest since Minnesota. Field goal percentage, lowest since Minnesota. Three-point percentage, lowest since Minnesota. He was durable last year. He just wasn't getting the job done with this team. And I don't know what to make of that. Like, was that just kind of like one of those weird years for Andrew Wiggins? Did we see, like, a reversion to the player that he really is? Like, like that's a real wild card for me, because Andrew Wiggins was undisputably a key factor in that 2022 championship. He has been a big-time player for this team over the last few years. But last year, he was a liability. And you saw the numbers, like, can't play with Kuminga. Like, it's
I was going to say, yeah, the Kuminga fit was so weird. And like, how does that solve itself this year? You know, I still haven't figured that out. Like, why am I to believe that Kuminga and Wiggins are going to work together this year? And then you look at, like, you know, I'm not saying ESPN's depth chart here is the gospel. Like, Kuminga's going to come off the bench again for Wiggins. Like, I think Kuminga's got to start. I think Wiggins got to
start. I think he's
got to
start too.
They have interesting pieces, but the vibes are not great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be something to watch. Like, if Wiggins can get back to being the guy we saw last couple of years, yeah, that's obviously going to help. If he's still the same guy we saw last season, they're going to have to try to move him sooner rather than later. All right, let me finish, Rohan, with the Suns, who have effectively doubled down on what they did last season. Phoenix won 49 games last year, swept out of the playoffs in the first round by Minnesota. That didn't stop Matt Ishbia from saying, you know what, we're still all in on our big three. They kept KD, they kept Booker, they kept Bradley Beal in place, swapped out some rotation pieces, and they are giving it a go once again in the Valley. So I'll frame it this way. Are the Phoenix Suns a contender, or are they a pretender going into the season?
If I had to pick, I'm going pretender still. And I know Suns fans are excited. They're like, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, 40% of our Olympic closing lineup. Like, you know, we still have the two important guys when it matters. And I love Devin Booker. I think what he did for Team USA, I think a lot of people have been kind of the underrated MVP, the real glue guy. Fantastic. Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. Practice your jumper in the club as much as you want. Like, you've earned the right. You know, and he's as good as he's ever been. I saw someone tweet out his post-Achilles tear stats. They've been better since pre-Achilles tear. The guy's still got it. Their big issue is, you know, every time one of these big three forms, we're like, there's only one basketball, positional redundancy. It's never been more redundant in kind of one of these big three fits than Bradley Beal and Devin Booker. And they play the exact same position, and Bradley Beal is significantly worse at it. And Devin Booker, you know, career high in assists last year. He made great strides as a playmaker. You don't want him playing point guard. And they're always going to run into an issue where they either have to play Booker at point guard or they bring a point guard on the floor, and now you just don't really have a great perimeter defense. And then you mix that in with Yusuf Nurkic, just kind of your rim protector. I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it can work this way. And they can't trade Bradley Beal. I mean, I don't know how they do it. He's got the no trade clause still. You know,
shout out Tommy Shepard.
Yeah, a lot of money left on that contract. I don't know how they make it work. And I like what they did this summer. I like Tyus Jones. I like Monte Morris a lot. I think those are guys that can contribute on a good team. I like that they brought back Royce O'Neal. I thought he's the kind of player they need around Booker and Durant. I just think the Beal thing really sinks them, because as long as Beal is on the roster, it just messes up the lineups they have to play. And, you know, I don't think they can make it work with Beal and Nurkic playing big minutes. Frankly, I just don't think they can.
Yeah, I tend to feel the same way. And I would go with pretender as well. And it pains me to say that, mm-hmm. because of how much I like watching Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Like, Kevin Durant is just a generational scorer, a generational talent overall, but a generational scorer. I mean, this guy, just even watching him this summer with Team USA, like the shots he makes, the instant offense he provides, like, where would this team be without Kevin Durant? Like, yeah. He misses the entire exhibition season. Then he comes in and just is lights out in those first couple of group play games. But I agree with the fit issues. I do think Tyus Jones is interesting. Like, a lot of people love Tyus Jones. Like, he mm-hmm. was, you know, he was like the great backup quarterback.
Yeah, the original, like, OG plus minus god, Tyus Jones.
Like, the best backup point guard in the NBA, the best point guard that was not starting. He gets a chance to start in Washington. That was a shitty year for the Wizards. But Tyus Jones was actually pretty good. 12 points, 7 assists. He shot better than 41% mm-hmm. from three. No idea if those numbers translate from a awful Wizards team to a really good Phoenix mm-hmm. Suns team. But I think you got to play him. Like, we saw last year, this team doesn't work without a point guard. Frank Vogel was fired because this team didn't have a point guard. It was nothing Frank Vogel did wrong. It was because this team did not have a natural playmaker. So you have to put him in there. And if you put him in there, to your earlier point, you're playing Beal, Booker, Durant, and probably Nurkic, because you have somebody big up front. That team's not getting stops. Like, they're not. They're going to have a lot of problems defending all the great wings that are in the NBA. And I was looking at some of Phoenix's defensive numbers, because, look, it wasn't a small sample size that Booker and Beal and Durant played together. They played 40 games together. That's not nothing. Like, that's almost half a season that they were able to mm-hmm. play together. So you saw some of it. And after the All-Star break, Phoenix was 14th in defensive rating. They were 12th in points allowed. They were 6th in opponent field goal percentage. That's good. But they were 18th in defending the three. That's mm-hmm. bad. So I don't know. I don't know how you make that defense work at a high level, because you've got to at least be in that top 10 in most defensive categories to win in the playoffs. And I don't know how they get there. I think they can be more efficient offensively with Tyus in the mix. You know, maybe in the fourth quarter, you play Royce O'Neal more minutes, you try to get a little bit better defensively. But I look at this team and I say, all right, yeah, they're probably a 45 to 50 win team, but in the Western Conference, that's probably in that play-in range. Then you get to the playoffs, and can they get stops? I don't know, man. I want to believe in the greatness of Kevin Durant. I really do. But I just, in today's NBA, where versatility matters, where defense matters, I think they come up short in key areas.
And not only can they get stops, we saw that other teams have the ability to get stops against them. Like, the Wolves did a fantastic job defensively in that series because they had length, aggressive perimeter defenders. We saw it, like Devin Booker's getting hounded, bringing the ball up, you know, by Jaden McDaniels, by Nikhil Alexander-Walker, by Mike Conley. He's getting hounded, bringing the ball up. That's taking energy out of him. And then on the other end of the floor, it's like he's got a guard, Anthony Edwards. He's got a guard, a great wing player. You know, they struggle now. You look at the Timberwolves had size. They struggled against the Timberwolves size. Like Kevin Durant's got to guard Karl Anthony Towns and kind of bang with him, you know, on the block or whatever the case may be. That's what makes this tricky. And what's funny, Chris, is it's like, let's say you started a lineup that was like Tyus Jones, Devin Booker, Royce O'Neal, Kevin Durant, and then a center that's better than Nurkic. Like that avenue was kind of available to them. But they made this Beal trade. And you know, I get Suns fans who are like, they didn't really have a ton of options with Chris Paul. What was the magical Chris Paul trade out there at the time where they're getting these two role players back? Like it was either that or lose them for nothing. But I think the Beal thing is severely kind of handicapping them right now. And yeah, I unless Beal is willing to take like a really reduced role. And like you said, maybe not play in the fourth quarters. And you see more Monte Morris, you see more Royce O'Neal. I mean, Damian Lee, I've liked for them. He missed all of last year with an injury. I wonder if they can get some more out of him this year. They picked up Mason Plumlee, which is a pretty solid, you know, backup center option for them. But, you know, we saw it in big moments. It's like you either have to play Durant at the five, and that's a lot of pressure to put on him, or you risk Nurkic getting called up into every pick and roll in a big moment. He fouls a ton, too. That's another problem. It's like they have two of the most fouling centers in the league right now. Like, it's a good team, but it's not good enough for what the Western Conference has become.
It's also going to be another learning curve with a new head coach.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're going to have to figure out Mike Budenholzer's system. There's probably going to be an adjustment period early in the year. You do have new rotation pieces, as we mentioned, that are going to try to figure out what their roles are going to be with this team. Like, that takes time. And it, you know, it oftentimes, like, chemistry matters in the NBA. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at what the successful teams have done in recent years. They have been teams that have been together for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Like, yeah, you know, you can't nuke a team together anymore. It just doesn't work in today's NBA. So
also, real quick, I love Bud. I think he's a really good coach. And, you know, it's very unfortunate how it ended for him in Milwaukee with kind of the personal tragedy he was going through at that time, even though it was probably the right move for that team. But, like, what is Budenholzer? Like, they hired a different Frank Vogel. It's like, we hired a guy who's had success in multiple stops, won a championship, and got let go. It's like, this is the same hire you just made. It's like maybe the offensive version of Frank Vogel, as opposed to, like, this is me, my way of saying I have the utmost respect for Frank Vogel. I think he's gotten railroaded back-to-back jobs now. Like, I don't know that what they've done coaching wise. Like you said, all they've done is given them more of a learning curve. And got rid of like one really good coach for another really good coach.
Yeah, I don't, not to make this the Frank Vogel defense podcast, but I don't know what more they expected from that team, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there were some stories out there that I didn't really buy. You know, I mean, look, some things get sensationalized, I think, anyway. Like, you know, yes, does Frank Vogel, you know, yells at players in the locker room. Well, that happens all the time. You know, takes differing strategies to try to motivate players. That happens all the time in the NBA. I've said this before. I never bought the idea that Kevin Durant checked out on him. I don't believe that at all. They won 49 games. Like, with their trio missing half the season together, only playing 40 games. I don't know. Could they have won 52 and gone 6 games? With the Timberwolves, it's pretty clear the Timberwolves are pretty damn good, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
got to the conference finals, pretty damn good team. Been together a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't know what more you could have expected from Frank Vogel. So I don't believe, as much as I think of Mike Budenholzer, and I think he's a really good coach, I don't think he automatically means 5 to 10 more wins and a trip to the conference finals. Like, I don't see it. Maybe if that big three is healthy all season long, which, again, Bradley Beal's been hurt a lot in his career. Kevin Durant's in his, you know, mid to late 30s right now. Devin Booker missed a chunk of time last season. You know, Booker and Durant coming off USA Basketball, that shortens their offseason up a little bit. I don't know. I don't know. I still see this team kind of exactly where they were last year. You know, a 7-8 seed in the play-in, and then they're in a dogfight with, like, New Orleans or or Golden State, maybe worse, like obviously worse than last year, but like in the dogfight, like New Orleans, Golden State. I don't know that they get into the playoff field this year as good as I think they are.
That's, well, I don't know about that. It's going to be, the West is going to be interesting. I have no idea how good the Clippers are going to be. I am buying up all the Grizzlies stock that I can get. The Nuggets are also, I think, going to take a step back in multiple ways. I think not only did they lose KCP, you guys complain about maybe how hard they pushed last regular season. It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be very
interesting. Well, you think about, though, they were the sixth seed last season, and that they were in a literal tie with New Orleans, right? 49-33.
True.
So they're not that far removed from being a play-in team. I agree with you on the Clippers. I think the Clippers take a step back and they're a play-in team, maybe at best this year. If they have one major injury, they're in a lot of trouble. But you look at the bottom of those standings, like Memphis, they're going right back up. Uh-huh. Like you can see Memphis easily landing.
San Antonio
in the top
could
four.
Be incredible all of a sudden.
San Antonio with Chris Paul is going to take a step forward. Houston, they're going to take a step forward. Like you got, and look at the Pelicans. I don't know what, if they're done dealing at this point, but if they're healthy, they're going to be as good or better than they were last year. I don't see the Suns improving all that much, basically. I think 49-52 wins is kind of what this team is. And the way the Western Conference shakes out, I don't know that gets you out of the play-in tournament. It's a reality. Like, Golden State was 10th with 46 wins, right?
Yeah.
Like, the teams underneath them are going to be markedly better. I think it's going to be real tough for Phoenix this year. Unless Tyus Jones turns into a star point guard, which maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year that Tyus Jones, after being the backup's favorite backup, after being the starter in Washington, gets his opportunity on a playoff team and shines as a starting point guard. Could happen. He had a great year last year. But that, to me, is the best chance Phoenix has of making a big-time jump. Rohan, always good to talk to you, my friend. Working now over at NBC News, living in Chicago, back in the Windy City where your college roots were formed. I could see the college-like backdrop of yours.
There we go.
You got the microwave that probably doesn't work. You've got the pin-up wall I think I see back there. The old furnishings got going on there. I'm just going to keep making fun of your backdrop.
I appreciate it. Come a long way from my mom's basement. So great to be back on the podcast, Chris. As always, man. Great to talk.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.